Hey, do you have an idea for a podcast but don't know where to start? Or do you have an already existing podcast that you want to take to the next level? Well, check out WeKnowPodcasting.com. From concept development to theme music to editing to logos, WeKnowPodcasting.com is a one-stop shop for all things pod. Don't hesitate to hit us up. We're very nice. In 2004, a 17-year-old St. Louis rapper named Jaquan released the single Tipsy, which took him from obscurity to regular rotation at every club in the country. It was an undeniable beat mixed with an undeniable hook, and it became a bona fide party hit. But as quickly as the popularity came, it vanished, thanks in part to some strange music industry shenanigans. Today, we're joined by producer and Matt Mania host G1 to the Rescue to talk about Jaquan's career, his disappearance, and the sometimes fickle world of hip hop.
One hit is all you need to make the money guaranteed, and you can live off royalties forever. And it makes me wonder, is it just a wonder, or is it one hit thunder?
All right, so G1 to the Rescue, you came here today to talk about the most 2004 song I've ever heard in my life, Tipsy by Jaquan, who, let's just get this cleared up right now, is not missing, was never missing, and was very upset about the fact that people thought he was missing, because there are people that are actually missing. Jaquan was not missing. He just was in a weird record label situation. That's what was going on.
Yeah. He fell back after a while. From what I heard, he started doing other things, and I want to say technology. I think I watched a little something from BET on YouTube where it was like last couple of years. I guess he invested into something and some app and it worked. I've never heard of the app, surprisingly, but you know, that's no shade. You know, I definitely wish him the best.
I gotta say, this song's pretty awesome. I think the beat is amazing. It's an undeniable beat, and this song's pretty undeniable. Here, I'm gonna ask you this though.
Mm-hmm.
Is Jaquan considered cheesy? Is it by other rappers? I guess that's the impression I got.
No. I wouldn't say that at all. Man, at the time, you know, and keep in mind, I live in Arizona, but I grew up in Chicago. Jaquan's from St. Louis. At the time, you know, when that record came out, what you said, that was 04. So we talking, you know, junior year in high school for me, I was 16. When that record dropped. And man, at the time, that was the business. Ain't nobody felt no certain way of this, that, and the third. It's just, you know, a lot of times with artists, it's just hard for him to follow up. Now, Tipsy is his big hit, but he did have another single from the same album that he followed up with called Hood Hop. Now, that's my personal favorite record of Jaquan's. But obviously, Tipsy was the bigger record, but it just seemed like after Tipsy and after Hood Hop, we just really didn't hear much else from dude.
I think that you and I watched the same. It was basically kind of a where are they now kind of thing from BET. I had no impression either way about Jaquan. I know that a big thing he talked about was like in 2013 or something, Kanye referenced liking him. and that was like a big deal. But it seemed like there was some backlash from like Pusha T and maybe like the Odd Future guys or something. There was something along those lines, but that kind of stuff's always happening in hip hop, it seems like.
So the guys that produced that record are a couple of guys by the name of the Track Boys. And the one thing I will say is that song at the time, because it was only 2 years removed from the Neptunes producing Grindin' for the Clips, there were a lot of people that were feeling like the Track Boys kind of ripped off the Grindin' beat a little bit. And from a producer perspective, I'm going to say they didn't rip it off necessarily, but I could tell that they were trying to catch that wave of just stripped down heavy drums, maybe a synth,
yeah,
which is a lot of what was going on in the early 2000s. That was kind of the production era that influenced me and what I do. So I get it, but people kind of felt like based on that, it was corny. But other than that, yeah, I don't think, at least not from my perspective, as far as when I went to the, even now in my 30s, when I go to the club and it just so happens to come on, oh, people still turn up all the time. That's just one of them that'll never go out of style.
Yeah, that beat. Now, I didn't hear the Grindin' parallel till you said that. Now I'm like, oh,
now
yeah,
you
obviously.
You thought about it, you like, yeah.
Yeah. But you know what it made me think of when I was listening to this beat today? It reminds me of We Will Rock You. It reminds me of Queen. It's just that, like, heavy hitting bass and snare, you know?
And also from a producer perspective, I listened to that record a million times, and I definitely feel like Track Boys probably did sample the main rhythm from We Will Rock You and might have split that into two drums and did they think. I mean, who wouldn't? You know what I'm saying? So if they did, phenomenal. I couldn't tell you, but it definitely sounds like those stomps and that clap. Sounds like those stomps for a kick. It sounds like that clap from the audience whenever that song comes on.
Those type of beats, even when you think about like 99 Problems, those ones that are almost like mix the rock and hip hop that, you know, like you said, it never goes out of style. When
Man.
This Jaquan beat, this will never go out of style. When is this not gonna make you feel good and make
it's,
you
it
want
always
to party?
Does. You'll sing the lyrics when they come on in the club. One. Here comes the two to the three to the four. Everybody drunk out on the dance floor. Baby girl ass jiggle like she want more. Like she a groupie and I ain't even on tour. Like it was hard. I'm telling you.
Well, here's one thing. I want to talk about the music video for this.
Come on.
Keep in mind, you said you were a junior in high school. You were basically the same age as Jaquan. He was 17 years old when this song came out. Pretty crazy. And I loved when I said this was the most 2004 song ever. Within the first 15 seconds of this video, first of all, I was like, damn, that is the sickest Atlanta Falcons coat I've ever seen in my life. And then, boom, there it is, a T-Mobile sidekick. The sidekick won. Oh, you know it. You know he was texting everybody about the party at his house on his sidekick. And I have to say, that was the year that I got a sidekick and all my friends. We were on tour in our band and everybody got a sidekick at the same time. And you could go on Instant Messenger on your sidekick. Oh, man, that changed the game. You could talk to girls on Instant Messenger in the van.
Man.
That was the greatest ever.
Listen.
Do you have a sidekick?
I had the one of the last ones that they made. T-Mobile and Motorola did something called the Sidekick Slide. That was the one I had. That was the cool one, in my opinion. It's like everybody had the flip screen. I just liked the simplicity of my shit just sliding up. It was black on black. I bought that because I moved out here with a Motorola Q that I had back home in Chicago. Remember the Q? Looked like a BlackBerry a little bit. It was hella thin, though.
Yep.
So I moved out here with the Q. Cricket wasn't a thing back home. That's something that came much later. But Cricket was prevalent here in 07. And at the time, I needed my phone turned back on, so I flashed my cue to Cricket, but then eventually I got a plan with T-Mobile, and that's when I had the Sidekick Slide. Man, I missed that.
So
I missed
awesome.
That thing
so
much. So
awesome. Change the game. Dwayne Wade had his own sidekick, which I thought was awesome.
Hell yeah. The only problem, everybody has, you know, smartphones now, but at the time, stuff like that and the BlackBerry were the smartphones. But the only thing that I hated is that it seemed like when you had a sidekick for whatever chick you was dating during that time, it just felt like you couldn't do anything right. Everything you did when you was on the sidekick was talking to another female. Like, man, why I can't just be, you know what I'm saying, hitting the homies? Yeah. You talking to that bitch. Let me see your phone screen.
2004 problems, man. But, you know, okay, so you and I both watched that BET thing about Jaquan. The craziest part of that I got to talk to you about is, so some woman right when Tipsy hit, said that the baby that she had was Jaquan's. Now, he paid child support for that kid for 7 years, and the court never let him take a blood test. I didn't understand this part. Why couldn't he have taken a test at any point? He paid child support for 7 years, and then finally, in like 2010, he got to take, the court let him take a blood test, and then they said, oh, okay, that isn't your kid. Why wasn't he allowed to for 7 years? I didn't understand that part.
Bro, you know what? I'm gonna put it to you like this. Here's the number one problem. I don't want to make it a stereotype or generalization just to, you know, African Americans in relationships, but what I've noticed a lot is there's way more what you would call baby mama drama on our side of things than it might be. You know, I can't speak for your side of things, but then it might be on your side. It's really hard to explain.
There are so many crazy things about the story. I mean, the song is undeniable, but also the song blew up. The way I understood it from that thing that we both watched was this song blew up so fast that he had a gold record like that week that it came out. And then he was like confused and bummed because he's like, why isn't it platinum? And the people are like, yo, it takes like a little bit of time to get to platinum. You just got the gold in like a week.
You already at gold like in 2 seconds, bro.
Yeah.
You ought to be proud of yourself. Pat yourself on the back, my dude.
Yeah. But then it seems like it was all this stuff happened in the same week in the way he was telling it. So he then performs on Saturday Night Live while the Olsen twins are hosting. and he's like, what do you mean? I got to actually perform this live? You mean this is live? They're like, yes, it's Saturday Night Live. You have to perform live.
Oh, wow.
He's like, okay. And he's like, I'm chugging Red Bull backstage, getting ready. And then apparently at Saturday Night Live, this same week, his record label, Arista, went like out of business. Like Arista no longer exists anymore. And at Saturday Night Live, before he performs, Barry Weiss of Jive Records comes up to him with his kids and is like, hey, I have your contract now. You're on Jive now. And he's like, what? And he's like, yeah, you're on Jive now. And he's like, what do you mean? He's like, L.A. Reid signed me. I don't know you. Who are you? And that's a big part of why he disappeared, you know?
Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right about that. And honestly, multiple people who were signed to Arista when the Jive merger happened got fucked, in so many words, in that situation. Matter of fact, the biggest of those stories would be the Neptunes, Pharrell Williams and Chad Hugo,
because
they had a label under Arista, Star Trek. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, that when the Jive merger happened, now Star Trek is under Jive. And at this point, the Clips are now on Jive. And it had took them so long for them to put out their second album, because at the time Jive was on some bullshit and didn't want to put this album out. Mind you, by the time that second album was released, that album was one of few albums to get the full XXL in XXL magazine. That's considered classic status. That's Clips Hell Half No Fury. But you'll even hear Pusha talking about it. You know the song Mr. Me Too?
No, I don't.
I know. Yep. Yeah, you too. Okay, we get it. Yep.
Oh, I do know that song. Yeah, okay.
Everybody needs Mr. Me Too. If you remember the last line in Pusha's verse, he said, "These are the days of our lives, and I'm sorry to our fans, but them crackers wasn't playing fair at Jive." You'll hear him say that.
Oh,
so
wow.
A lot of people had issues with Jive.
Yeah. So I mean, it makes sense. I mean, I guess a little bit on that BET piece about Jaquan, there was talk. I think there were some things that like were assumed, like people knew and stuff that maybe I didn't know, you know, like as far as like what the whole story with Jive was, what went down. But that's not a unique story. You've heard that story a lot of times about
multiple times.
Yeah. Like people having albums shelved, like people deliver this album and they're proud of it, and then no one ever hears it. I've heard that in the punk rock world. I've heard that like you know, you've heard that story a million times, and that,
man,
that,
thank you. Thank yeah. you, DistroKid. Thank you, United Masters.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Exactly.
Thank you,
man.
God, that changed the game. Oh yep. shit. We don't have to have a label, and we can just put out music when we want to.
Right.
Huh.
Right.
What are the odds for 30 right. something bucks a year?
Right. Well, yeah. Like him or hate him, Chance the Rapper kind of changed the game. You can be nominated and win Grammys and shit and release your own album. Like that's man. Pretty awesome. You know, once that happened, I was like, you know, I think I was still holding on. I was, you know, my band was signed to a label called Fueled by Ramen, which basically became Warner Brothers. Okay. And I saw that label grow from a one room operation in Gainesville, Florida, to being the biggest label on earth, like in the matter of, like, you know, a few years. Point being, I've seen the inner workings of all this stuff just as you do, but I think part of me was still holding on to that idea that, like, oh, you need to be on a record label to be successful. But then, you know, once I saw Chance the Rapper thing, I already kind of knew. But once I saw that, I was like, oh, man, it's over.
I think that changed a lot of people's perspective, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
The Chance thing changed a lot of people. Chance changed a lot of people's perspective. God rest his soul, Nipsey Hussle, when he released his Marathon project independently and sold each tape for like $100 independently on his website. And we talking about, like, people like Jay-Z was like just buying multiple copies of his shit and this, that, and the third, to the point where he had did 100,000 all independent with no with yeah. no label.
Yeah. I mean,
nothing. So yeah.
Yeah.
It, pretty crazy.
It was crazy when you could see that you could, if you had a clever way to market yourself, or great music, obviously, but also, I don't know, creative, and can find creative ways to put yourself out there, you don't need to spend a single dollar to be successful. And I think, you know, that was really cool. I think that, you know, it's a shame, if bringing it back to Jaquan, it's a shame he had this hit and he found himself in this weird record label situation.
Yeah,
man. He said he had hard drives just full of songs and whatever. And I listened to some of his other songs. I'm like, oh, these are pretty cool. The song you had mentioned that was your favorite, I thought that song was pretty cool. I think,
oh, Hood Hop, yeah.
But I think this song's, like you said, it's obviously
Tipsy is the upper echelon.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing I wanted to talk about too with this song is the music video. Now, in the song, he's talking about being in the club and getting tipsy. But the music video is a house party. And for me, the house party's always been way more fun. I don't know. Like, you know, you're surrounded by the people you want to be surrounded with, and no weird random people. You don't have to pay exorbitant amount of money for drinks. And I've just always been a proponent of the house party. So I don't know. I feel like maybe the lyric could have been alluding to the house party more.
A lot of this at house parties.
Yeah, for sure.
A lot of that at house parties.
For sure. For sure. We'll let the listeners assume what you were holding up there.
Yes, zip.
hey, my producer, Matt's been quiet this whole time, but I did want to ask Matt, you know, Matt doesn't partake in these sort of things, but Matt, do you feel like you're missing out by not having to been able to get tipsy in the club with everybody?
Not really, but I still enjoy this song. For a really long time, my roommate's ringtone was this song playing in the background, and his nickname was Shrop. So it'd just be, sorry, Shrop's in the club getting tipsy. And then it was all of his friends in the background whispering, Shrop's in the club getting tipsy.
That's funny. That's funny as hell.
Nice. Another thing about this music video that, I don't know, maybe this is a sign of the times, and I don't know if either of you guys can explain this, but why did people at this point think that wearing a hat like Gilligan from Gilligan's Island was cool? Who was trying to make that cool? And like the white bucket hat that people are wearing in this music video. I don't know why that was a thing at any point. I don't know if anyone's still trying to make that a thing. If that was popular in 2004, I don't know. Maybe,
you know, well, I mean, people love buckets. He just so happened to have on a white one, but people love bucket
still?
Hats. I have a I got a bucket. I got a wild bucket hat for my job. I got another bucket hat that I wear pretty frequently, which has the Backwoods logo on it. And it's reversible that I bought from Just Blaze, which is a smoke shop right up the street from me. So, yeah, man, bucket hats have never went out of style. They're, especially out here in the summertime, you can definitely benefit from a bucket.
You're
living in cold ass Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I'm in Pittsburgh, so we don't need the buckets as much. But yeah, that makes sense.
In the summertime, you know, it'll be something fun to maybe switch up a style. But yeah, like buckets and fedoras and that stuff is still popping. It's about finding a particular bucket that's unique to you and kind of doing. It's almost like, for me, I feel like my thing in bucket hats is kind of like a hippie thing. Like, you see me in the big beard and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I'm rocking the buckets. All right. And I'm partaking in things that are legal in the state that I'm in. So, you know, it feel right when I put on my bucket hat.
Did you just sell me on bucket hats? I think you just convinced me.
I was going to say, do you think that there's an element of confidence to rock it that people are just like, look at him, just wearing a bucket hat, not giving a shit, like that like wins people over?
I tell you what, it'll win the ladies over, because think about this shit for a second from a women's perspective. If your teeth are nice and if your lineup is nice and you in that low bucket hat and a chick can't see nothing but from here down and all this is nice, you might get a conversation.
Oh man,
that might spark up a talk, because they can't see your eyes, they can't see your head, so all they see is nose, lips, mouth, lineup. If you got a beard, cool. If not, whatever. Face. So they're gonna look like, I wonder what's to him, you know.
That makes sense.
Now if you fuck around and you got like the Forrest Whitaker eye once you take the hat off, I mean, you know, I can't nobody help you there.
But take it easy on Forrest Whitaker. Come on, guy.
No, listen, he's one of my favorite actors. Yeah, I'm sure I'm not the only person in history that's ever talked shit about his eye.
No, I would dare to say you are not the only person.
Hey guys, it's Matt, just interrupting the episode real fast to say, hey, do you like coffee? I know Chris and I do. So if you're a fan of coffee, how about you head over to rootlesscoffee.com, which you may remember is run by past guest Jono, and get yourself a bag of some coffee grinds. If you use the promo code OHT, all caps, 10, you will get 10% off your purchase, and a little bit of that money will come back to Chris and I. So it's a great way to help support the show and get a great cup of coffee. And now back to the episode.
Hey, another really strange thing about Jaquan is that after this song, of I don't know if it was a few years later or a year later, he collaborated with Andy Milonakis.
Aha!
Which is,
I did hear about
the strangest thing ever. And I got to tell you that just a couple weeks ago, Andy Milonakis popped up on my TikTok, and you know why he did? Because that was the first place I saw the Island Boys, was a video of him doing a duet with the Island Boys, and I'm like, what the fuck is this? And
that's hilarious. Wow.
I don't know if we want to go down that path right now, but when I first saw the Island Boys, I was like, oh my God. Yes. This is amazing. Send it to everyone I know. I have this group text with all my friends where we just send each other stuff nonstop all the time. And sent that, and everyone was like, oh my God. And it's like everyone just singing, I'm an island boy. You know, I'm hearing to the point where I'm like, oh no, why did I send this to everybody? And then I don't know if you saw this video. They have a video for another song where it starts with their brothers. They're biological brothers, and the video starts, it's the two of them eating out two girls' butts next to each other. Like, that's the beginning of the video.
Hey,
but like,
that's a great way to start a video,
yeah,
actually.
But is it a weird thing to do with your brother? That's a that I'm an only child. I'm an only child, so I don't know.
Right. I mean, for some people it is. I couldn't see me and my brother doing it in the same room, but I've seen worse things happen with two guys and two girls in the same room. And it sounds funny that you would say you see worse things than two guys kneeling down eating ass at the same time.
No, there's not a damn thing wrong with that. But to be doing it with you, to be doing it with your brother. Like literally, like
Look,
six
Matt,
inches away from each other.
Red.
The more I see of the Island Boys, the more I'm like, oh no, we shouldn't have made these guys famous. This isn't a good thing.
I don't think the Island Boys are gonna surprise us like a little Nas X, where his career is just gonna keep going upwards. I'm pretty sure that we've already seen the peak of that career, and it's just kind of heading down.
I think they'll still be eating ass. Yeah. You know,
I kind of disagree with you, Matt. I kind of feel like these guys are gonna get their like shot. I mean, their videos.
Yeah, and it'll be nice, expensive ass.
Yeah, I guess, but
they got different things to choose from now. Yeah. Now it's a buffet when you get that up.
I hope they dine upon the most the most expensive of ass together. I'm sure they will. I'm sure they already are. Their cameos from them are like $200 for like a 30-second thing. I saw that the drummer of the Interrupters, Kevin, got him a cameo from the Island Boys. It was like 30 seconds long, and I heard that they're $200 to get them. So those guys are raking in the bucks. And all the only thing, like, yeah, it's funny, but there's such talented people out there making such amazing music that, like, I don't know. I kind of felt like a day later, like, oh shit, why did I spread this around? Why did I contribute to this? You know,
Chris, you realize it wasn't you specifically that made that entire video. If only I didn't send this to my text group,
there was a million of me texting that video to their friends, is what I'm getting at. Good thing. Like, I would have rather have texted Jaquan, like, hey, we should all be listening to this song tonight. You know, this is a great song.
Do we want to talk about what other people were also listening to while they were listening to Jaquan Tipsy?
Oh, yeah.
Because that's my favorite shit to run down.
Let's please.
So this song peaked at number 2 on the Billboard charts on April 17th, 2004. The number 1 song at that time was Yeah by Lil Jon and Ludacris, which was number 1 for 12 weeks. That's insane how long that was. Also on the charts at that exact same time, Usher Burn was at number 5. That would eventually be the song that took down Yeah. So Usher was just replaced with more Usher on the, the Billboard charts.
And you know what? To add to that real quick before you continue, you want to know why that happened? Because what everybody says is probably Usher's most highly regarded album, Confessions, came out in 2004. And both Yeah and his other follow-up single with that were all off the Confessions. That entire Confessions album was played for
the It was the summer of Usher, because it was literally followed by Burn, and then the next number 1 song in America was Confessions Part 3. Like, Usher had the top spot on Billboard on a lockdown. And then a few of the other noteworthy number 1 songs in 2004 that weren't by Usher was that you had Hey Yeah and The Way You Move by Outkast hit number 1 that year. Lean Back by Terror Squad hit number 1 that year. Goodies by Sierra and Drop It Like It's Hot by Snoop Dogg featuring Pharrell.
Damn.
So it was a good year on the Billboard charts.
Them was all bangers. And see, I had it super sweet back in the days, because I grew up at a time where people weren't scanning IDs. So, you know, for me, I guess I've always had this kind of older appearance to me, even as a youngin. And so I kept a real low profile. I wasn't super goofy when I went out. And let's just say that I was one of them kids that when I went out, you know, and my parents, after maybe about 16, almost 17, they gave me a little freedom. A lot of times when I went out, if I was going somewhere that was really only reserved for 21 and up, I didn't have to go through the back door. I went right in front.
Nice.
Dapped up the security guard and went about my business. So the couple of times I've been to the club that year, 2004 was.
Oh, man. Matt, did you say Hey Ya?
Hey Ya was just on the tail end. Yeah. That was like the end of 2003 bleeding into 2004 was the summer or the winter of Outkast. But Let me ask you guys a question, because I don't think that we'll ever actually have a reason to do an episode about this dude because he's got hits for days. But I've been thinking about this for the last couple months. Usher puts out, yeah, Little John's on that, but also Ludacris is on that. And I think that Ludacris might be one of the most underrated MCs in hip hop because he's a little goofy. People don't give him respect, but my God, does that dude spit fire verses every time that he's a guest on someone's track.
You know what? It's a lot. And honestly, it's way goofier dudes in the industry now than Ludacris. I won't necessarily say it's that. I think it's more so of, you know, he made smart investments. Like whenever he would drop an album, it would always be hot. There would always be a couple, it would always be about two or three singles, two or three videos, two or three budgets that he ended up recouping at that time, and that he actually made smart investments with his money and fell back. And I think part of what happens, like everything like 08 and forward, you know, because of like the streaming era starting to take off, people ain't paying attention to stuff that ain't like instantaneous. You got these guys that literally drop an album every other week, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's not like the days where you really give things a chance to stick with you. And Ludacris had classic albums that
one after another.
Once he started doing them Fast and Furious films, once he became Tez, you know, he started seeing some bigger checks and some bigger fanfare. Now he's married to a beautiful Native African woman with dual, and now he has dual citizenship in the States and in Africa. So he got a crib out there and a crib in the States.
He's one of those dudes like Jay-Z, Snoop Dogg, anybody who I think is a super successful MC. Mm-hmm. You can recognize their voice within one word. They can say one word and you know it. And I got to ask you, do you think Jaquan is that way? Would you recognize that? That's what I've been thinking this whole last couple minutes you guys have been talking is like, I don't know if he was that guy. He had that song. He has this song. But what the character of his voice stand out enough to be
quite honest, it don't. He doesn't have anything that set him apart from a lot of guys. Even during that time, he doesn't have a lot of things that set him apart from a lot of guys. Then, you know, depending on, I would have to hear some 2021 Jaquan, if such a thing even exists, in order to hear how he's been either keeping up or staying ahead of the times. But other than that, if I'm just going off of vocal inflation, it's a million guys that sound like Quan at this point.
Yeah. I guess I never even thought about that. That's a huge factor in it. Because that's a reason why we don't remember Jaquan, but no one's ever going to forget Q-Tip.
That leads to, you know, in closing here, that's, you know, label stuff aside. So say the Arista stuff doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. Say he has a normal career path, no weirdness.
Mm-hmm.
Does he continue being a like huge star or not? Because that leads, you know, at the end of these episodes, we decide, did this artist bring the one hit thunder, or was this a one hit blunder? And, you know, a lot of things can factor into this. I'm trying to picture a world where, you know, he has the normal path. Would he still be around putting out new music right now? Would he be topping the charts? I kind of don't think so. I kind of think that he had a great song and that was about it. I kind of think that would have been his career path.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's a weird stigma with rappers out of St. Louis. It's not a whole lot of them that are still out here thriving like Nelly is, because Nelly made sure that everything that he did, you know what I'm saying, at a certain point, you know, because he even said, like, when I was doing this in the beginning, this was just me and my guys. We was just putting on for the Lou. We didn't know what we was doing. And then as time went on, like, you know, when you got black folks, when you got white folks, when you got Asians, when you got the Spanish people on your stuff, and then you hop in, you tap in with the country guys, because a lot of your stuff can kind of meld into that world too. You and Tim McGraw do a whole song together. And I think him and Florida Georgia Line had collaborated on something a few years back, and that sort of thing. Nelly's probably the biggest name out of St. Louis. There are other big names, but they're not on the BET Hip Hop Awards getting lifetime achievement. You know what I'm saying? That only happened a few days ago. So it's just something with that city to where there needs to be another, either one person or another group of breakout artists to really get St. Louis out of that stigmatism. I mean, I know a couple of guys who can easily take it. I don't know. We'll see what, you know, we'll see what the work ethic and we'll see what the networking does. But I think it's just really the stigma of that city. If Jaquan had to maybe move somewhere and really like branched out and maybe networked a little bigger in the music industry and tapped in with somebody who would really like believed in him, and at that time when they were doing artist development and everybody just kind of wasn't on their own thing, if he was really developed into one of those timeless artists that could really cross over this, that, and the third, that'd be a different story. But just Jaquan on his own, put it this way, I just looked on his Wikipedia and there were three other albums that he dropped that I knew nothing about. And you're talking to a person that I live and breathe music, whether it's on the radio, not on the radio. I live on these streaming services during New Music Friday. So the fact that I didn't know about his other three albums, yeah, it was kind of over at the hood. It's a lot of things that could factor in that. Not to be super long-winded, but it's truly hard to say.
I'm not going to be long-winded. I'm going to say this song's great, but Jaquan is a one-hit blunder. And the main reason being because we've said this about bands and artists that had like super success and dropped off. This dude dropped off so hard that people thought he was missing. People literally thought he was missing.
That's what you would thought. So you're saying like missing. I thought you were just saying missing from the airwaves. You're saying missing.
There was an MTV news report that the record label was searching for him because they thought he may have been dead.
Literally
missing.
That's what
he was saying. Is like he came, then he had to make a video and be like, hey, I'm not missing. There are people out there who are actually missing. I'm not actually missing. And I don't know, maybe that rumor was started like people making fun of him or something, and then people took it seriously. I don't know the story.
Right.
All I know is this song is great, but I believe that Jaquan is a one-hit blunder. Mm-hmm. But you guys can chime in on whether he's thunder.
I'm with you on that. And I think for me it's like, come on, man. Like in the rap game and in the pop game, I don't care what the weird record label stuff is. You can't be taking 6 years to put out your follow-up album. Like
that's true also.
That's just like you're just like signing your fate at that point.
Yeah, that's true also. You can't
strike while the iron's
hot. You can only wait that long to pull out something if you're somebody of the class of like, say, for example, a Snoop Dogg or Jay-Z or somebody like that, because these guys these guys are at the point where shit's so sweet they don't even announce when an album is dropping, or they might announce it within the same week, like, hey, I got an album coming out Friday, first single out tonight. Yeah, Jaquan can't do that. So I can agree with both of y'all on that.
Well, before we completely sign off, G1, how about you tell people where they can check out not just the music you're working on, but the podcast you do?
I'm at G1 to the Rescue. G, the number one, and the words to the rescue, exactly the way it sounds. No alternate spellings. I'm that on every platform. That's Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Snapchat. Anywhere you're on social media, I'm there at G1 to the Rescue. I am also one-fourth and spiritually one-fifth of the Matt Mania podcast, Southwest Authority on wrestling, hip-hop, and everything in between. You can catch that on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. New episodes will be coming soon. Matt Mania Pod on Instagram and Matt Mania Podcast on Twitter and on Facebook.
Hell yeah.
This has been One Hit Thunder. One Hit Thunder is hosted by Chris Fafalios of the bands Punchline, Pack, and Another Cheetah, and produced by Matt Kelly of Geekscape.net. Underneath me, you're hearing Telephone Pole off the Punchline album Thrilled. Visit punchline.com for more information on future Punchline shows, releases, and merchandise. Punchline will be playing with Piebald in Lancaster on December 15th at Tell Us 360. If you see Chris or myself there, say hi. Do you want to hear your song at the end of the show, or do you have any interest in sponsoring an episode? Contact me at matt@geekscape.net for our rates. If you have any interest in podcasting, visit weknowpodcasting.com for how Chris and I can help make your show sound as professional as possible. Let us know your thoughts on the show by emailing us at onehitthunderpodcast@gmail.com. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to us on your favorite podcasting app, and tune in next week for another episode of One Hit Thunder. If you have any information, please call. I put your picture on a telephone pole. We're locked in the smoky basement and didn't know a soul. You're listening to the Geekscape Network.